Welcome to the National Bicycle Greenway's Mountain Mover podcast series. Here you will get up close and personal with people who are taking giant steps for the betterment of cyclists and for the planet itself.
In March of last year, we talked to Robert Riley, the man who first visualized the recumbent as we know it, when in 1969 he started selling do-it-yourself building plans in Popular Science for the Ground Hugger recumbent. So it only seemed right a year later that we should visit with the company that brought the first short wheelbase recumbent to America, if not the first recumbent. Here then is Jack Baker, one of the owners of the oldest recumbent manufacturer in the world, S&B Recumbents.
So, Jack, how are you doing down there in Southern California today?
Oh, pretty good. How about yourself?
Great. Thanks, Jack. You and I have talked a lot over the last probably decade, I guess, or so, about recumbent bicycles and things like that. And what a lot of people don't know about S&B Recumbents is they think of Gardner Martin, the recently deceased Gardner Martin of Easy Racer, and our Dick Martin, or Dick Ryan of the Avatar, and then the Ryan Recumbent as pretty much the fathers of the modern-day recumbent bicycle. But out here in California, your partner Smitty Smith was busy with the short wheelbase hypercycle recumbent. What year did you come on board?
I came on board. Him and I have been friends for years, so he asked me to come in with him, and we start manufacturing the S&B, Smith and Baker.
Okay.
And so now we start advertising, and we just start growing. We've been in business now since 91 or 92.
As S&B, huh?
Yes.
Do you know what year that Smitty started the hypercycle?
I believe it was in the late 70s.
Wow, so he had a pretty good running head start coming into the business, huh?
Yes, he was, I think, the first one in the States to come up with it, because he saw one in England, and he made his version of it here in the States. And he had a partner at that time named Milt Turner.
Uh-huh.
And they start manufacturing some. They had some made in Taiwan, which was a disaster. So,
oh, really? Okay. That's pretty funny.
they tried to regroup the hypercycle, which wasn't too successful, but, you know, they hung in there. They did a pretty good job of it. Then I came on board at the end of the hypercycle and tried to help them improve it. So Smitty and I improved it.
Huh.
And so we've been together ever since. I think we started in about 91 or 92.
So now you say you came aboard to help him improve the hypercycle. What's your background?
Well, I've been mostly in doing prototype in sheet metals. I wouldn't say I was an engineer, but I've done a lot of work for Hughes Aircraft, Northrop, things, places like that, doing prototype work.
Uh-huh. Huh.
And that's about it.
Huh. Wow. Well, I know that Smitty was a bus driver. And
Turner was the bus driver.
Oh, Milt Smitty was. Okay.
Milt Turner was the bus driver, yes.
Okay.
Smitty was a so-called, he was a mechanical engineer.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Yeah, he came back, his father was an engineer.
So were you working full-time at, for example, Hughes and some of these other airplane manufacturers before you came on board with Smitty here?
No, I had my own place, and engineers brought small items to me to make. And
wow.
Yeah, mostly in sheet metal work, you know.
So you had your own machine shop then, essentially.
I had more like a sheet metal shop and machine shop too.
Uh-huh,
I just dealt with small items, nothing big. I didn't. So.
Wow, that's fascinating. So, how much of the sheet metal work ports over to working with chrome moly?
About 100%.
Oh, really?
Huh. Oh, yes.
Well, we're talking about cylindrical surfaces versus flat surfaces.
The what surface?
Flat versus cylindrical. you've got tubing versus sheet metal, sheets of metal.
Yes, yes. Well, you know, it's all in the same field. You know, you could call work with tubing sheet metal also.
Uh-huh.
So it was dealing with metals alone, you know, okay. All type of metals.
So were you doing welding work then back then?
Yes.
And do you weld, excuse me for being kind of not knowing the precise understanding of how this thing should be understood here, but where sheet metal is concerned, do you heliarc that?
Yeah, heliarc, yes.
So it is an aluminum type of construction.
I do not do aluminum work anymore. I used to years ago, but aluminum and bicycles is not too good.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Yeah, because aluminum bikes, they crack a lot. Mm-hmm. Aluminum has a lot of cracks in it that you cannot see unless you magnaflux it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So we used to make aluminum bikes, but we had a few bikes crack on us, so we stopped doing it. Get too expensive.
Uh-huh. I can imagine that. Jeez, did you and Smitty ever try anything with carbon fiber or titanium at all?
No, it was too expensive to get into that. You know,
we're
more of a we try to not say a low end, but we try to keep our prices reasonable where the average person can afford one. You know,
uh-huh.
We always try to keep our bikes where the middle income people can afford to buy one. You know?
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
The people making, you know, $35,000, $40,000, $50,000 can afford to buy one.
Great. Okay. Yeah. Excellent. Okay. Well, you've become known as kind of a custom builder now. You can build pretty much anything. You're respected on a national level for that with that kind of reputation. Give us some examples of some of the bikes you've made.
Well, we made a trike with the two wheels in the front and one in the rear. And we call it a Venice Beach trike, and we also make a trike called the Speedster trike. It has two in the rear and one in the front. It's a long wheelbase. And we also make the Malibu bike. That is our bestseller, one of our bestsellers. And also, all our bikes are custom built to fit the individual. So if you weigh 500 pounds and 7 foot tall, I can build you a bike. And all my bikes are like that, except the Speedster. The Speedster itself, it has a max of 250 pounds per person.
It seems to me, I remember one at one point there was a fellow that was riding one of your bikes that you built it strong enough, and you were about the only person who could build it strong enough. He lost hundreds and hundreds of pounds. Who was that?
You know, I heard from him the other day.
Who was that?
His name was Ivy. He lived up in the state of Washington.
Mm-hmm.
He was an ex-professional football player, and he blew up to about 500 pounds. And he came down here for us to build him a bike. And we built him a Venice Beach trike bike.
Uh-huh.
And he called me about 2 years later and told me he lost about 150 pounds just riding a bike.
Wow.
Because he said, you know, the countryside was so beautiful until he started riding a bike.
Uh-huh.
And I heard from him the other day that he has lost 300 pounds.
Oh, my God.
In the last 4 years just riding a bike.
On a bike that weighs, a bike you make that weighs about, what, 30 pounds, right?
It weighs about, his bike ended up weighing about 40 pounds because he was so heavy, it had to do a lot of reinforcement on it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Now, when I was asking you about some of the examples of the bikes you made, custom bikes, you make a sewer bike for the city of Los Angeles. Tell us about that.
Well, it's for the county of Los Angeles, the water department. They had in touch with me. They're looking for a bike that they can ride underground in a 36-inch and a 36-inch pipeline and up for inspection because they have cameras that go down there, but camera cannot repair the pipeline inside. So they asked me, could I build a bike so they could ride down in the pipeline. because what they used to ride on a skateboard, push themselves on a skateboard down through the pipelines too. So I built up a trike and hooked it up where they can put a trailer on the back to put all their instruments so they can pull it through the pipelines.
Wow. And it had to be able to be lowered into the pipe and then expanded out to a bike, correct? It
had
to be.
Yes, what they had to do is take off the two front wheels, and it goes into an 18-inch manhole or sewer cover like you see in the center of the street.
Mm-hmm.
And they just loosen the seat, push the seat forward, and then lower the bike into the pipeline and assemble the wheels and get into the pipeline.
Wow.
It takes about 5 minutes tops.
Uh-huh.
Then they get on their little bike, and it's designed so you really don't have to steer it. It just practically steers itself in a round pipe. Mainly in a 36 and 48-inch pipeline, it practically steers itself.
Wow. Huh. Well, besides that bike, you've made some very strange bikes over the years. People have had some very unusual requests. Can you give us some examples of those?
Well, I just recently made a trike. It's a tandem trike for this person in Oregon. He was going to use it for a dog trainer, put dog harnesses on each side of the bike so he could dogs would build up their stamina. Am I saying it right?
Stamina.
You know, for pushing and pulling. You know, like when it get the dogs in a trot, he's just pedaling, the dogs have to run to keep up with him.
Wow. Okay. How about like for physically challenged? You made some very unusual bikes for that population as well.
Yes, I also made for people. You know, he had one hand or one arm or paralyzed in one of their legs, or he had one leg. I made tricycles for these people. And I've also made the 24-feet for a couple of people. There's one lady living in New York. She only had one leg, and I made her a 24-speed bike, and I heard from her about a year ago, and she said she's still riding, and she still loves the bike.
So how would that work? She'd pedal with one leg and any assistance from the arms? Or?
Well, there's a special boot that I use to put on the crank in the front.
Mm-hmm.
And the leg just rests in that boot. And if they have one good leg, the other leg, you know, if it's paralyzed or some people have MS or stuff like that, have no strength in the leg. But their leg will just rest in this boot, and their good leg would do most of the pushing. And by this one leg in bed, it helps build up the muscle and the tissue, and eventually that leg will start working pretty good.
Really?
Yeah, because in therapy, you can get therapy once a week or something like that. You know, they exercise your legs for 20 minutes, you know, and 20 minutes after you're out of there, you're right back to the same problem. But if you ride this bike, you know, it will really help build up the muscles and the tissues in the leg.
Huh. Wow. So is that a bike that you have in your lineup of bikes for available for sale, or something people have to ask you about that?
Well, I have it on my website.
Uh-huh.
And I ask the people, you know, on the website to give me a call, and I can discuss a lot of things with them. I can't put everything on the website, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Because you put everything on the website, it starts getting boring reading and looking at all this stuff.
Right,
you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So the website is, I guess, probably the best way to find it is just to have someone do a search for SNB, a Google search. Will that bring it up if they do just that, SNB Recumbents?
Yes, or even under your website, under
bikeroute.com. Uh-huh. Okay, great.
Yes.
Excellent. Okay. Because otherwise it's Recumbents. Take us through that website address real quick. After the www.
Okay, it's the HTTP.
ACB:// www. recumbens.packbell.net, something.
Okay, http://home.packbell.net/recumbent. RECUMBNT.
No ENT?
No, BNT.
Ah, okay. No E in that. Okay. Well, that's right. Good. That's good to know. I knew there was something else that was a gotcha about that name that people had to know. Great. Excellent. Okay, Jack. I got a question also about suppliers. You've dealt with lots of suppliers over the years, like Shimano and Suntour and some of these other people that make componentry. Is it tough being a little guy getting the prices down to where you can get cheap enough product for your ultimate end customer?
I mostly deal with Shimano parts. Mm-hmm. 95% of my parts are Shimano parts.
Right.
And I could, you know, they give me a pretty good price on them. I can't complain, you know.
Uh-huh.
So
you're able to buy.
I'm not a large buyer, you know. I only buy, you know, onesies and twosies from them at a time.
Uh-huh.
I can't afford to buy, you know, 10 items of each.
Huh.
So, you know, 10 items, you know, you get a breakdown on price, but it's only maybe 1 or 2%.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to benefit me to buy like that.
Interesting. Okay. Well, so let's get to the punchline of all of this, because I know there are people out there in this very white, engineer-laden industry called the recumbent marketplace. You and Smitty are a couple of black guys. Have you felt that that's been kind of over the years that that's worked against you, or have you experienced racism in your efforts? Or be honest with me, what's your feeling about all that?
Yes, we've experienced quite a bit of racism.
Huh.
And yes, we've even had people come from 1,000 miles away to check out our bikes and stuff like that and find out who we are. And they just walk away and say they'd be back or something like that. And so...
And they don't come back, huh?
Yes. We've even had people come from Texas, Florida, and Cleveland, Ohio, made special trips out here for me to build a bike. And then they saw who I was, and they said they'd be back. You know, so you get the message once you talk to them for a minute.
Huh.
So.
Wow.
Yeah, and then even at a lot of trade shows we've been to, and people find out who we are, and they just walked on the way.
What do you think it's so that they think the black people can't engineer good bicycles or something like that? Or?
You know, I've heard that before, you know.
Yeah.
They say, I didn't know you black guys made this bike. So, what difference does it make? Who it is, you know, the bike is made and
yeah.
It's a durable bike.
Yeah, and what's
so
really wild is that it took a black guy to bring recumbents to America.
That's right.
Smitty, you know. And, geez, that's absolutely bizarre for me to kind of hear that and try to think that through. I know when I first talked to you years ago, I knew you were a black guy. And I thought it was great. I thought it's about time we get some color in this industry, you know. And not about time. I'm thinking, wow, you know, because like when I say this industry, bikes and the bike industry, because I've been doing bikes for a lot of years I've been in the industry since 1987. And in, for example, the upright crowd there, I can't think of anybody who does anything in the way of building that is... That isn't black. I can't think of it, that person, you know. And yet I first come into recumbents in 1991 or something like that, and I'm talking to you, and I'm thinking, yeah, all right, man, this is great. Because
if you notice in the recumbent field, mm-hmm. our bike, which was a Hypercycle at first, then came on to be the S&B, mm-hmm. if you look at them, all of them just start looking alike, you know. Mm-hmm. Most of the recumbent bikes were copied after our bike.
Right, right. Exactly. Short wheelbases, right. Wow.
Right.
Wow. Too bizarre.
Yeah, we had a lot of... And we had a lot of so-called engineers were telling us our design wasn't right and all this kind of stuff. And anyhow, we stuck with it.
Well, you know what's really funny, Jack, is that I hear the persecution, quote-unquote, of sorts. And yet, I know you and I've met you. We've had dinner together and all that kind of stuff. And I think what a huge heart and a man full of love. That's all you have to give away, and it's great. Am I correct in that assertion?
Say, you just have to keep pushing and look ahead and don't look back.
I love it. Wow.
Yeah.
Well, Jack, that said, I'm probably going to let you get back to building some bikes today.
Oh, can I say one more?
Please,
thing?
Please, indeed, yeah.
I'm still the oldest recumbent manufacturer in the country.
Oh, really? I never thought about that. Yeah.
Who's the oldest?
That's right. Ryan. Ryan is gone.
Right.
And Easy Racer is, Gardner's not here anymore.
Envision is gone.
Envision is nowhere near. They were nice try. they were nowhere. They weren't even half as long as you, you know.
Right.
DeFelice, I can't think of anybody. Yeah, you're definitely the oldest. Wow.
I'm still hanging in there, and all the rest of them are dead and gone. And
wow. Wow. Awesome. Jeez, Jack. Well, in addition to that, is there anything else you think you'd like to add before I say get back to work?
well, that's I think that's about it. It's good talking to you, and... hope we can talk again soon.
All right, Jack. You're awesome. You really are. So, again, thanks for taking some time for this and for me and for our listeners out there. And I just hope that people have a better feeling now for S&B and that they're buying some major league powerful history there. And, wow. So, thanks to you, guy.
Okay, and thanks a lot.
All right, Jack. Take care of yourself, man.
Okay, you too.
Bye. See you later. Bye.
Okay.
Bye.
That was Jack Baker of S&B Recumbents. To find them on the web, do a search for S&B Recumbents at Google or at bikeroute.com.
That wraps up another edition of the National Bicycle Greenways Mountain Movers podcast series. We hope you enjoyed it. This has been NBG Director and Awake Again author Martin Krieg. For more info about the NBG, go to nationalbicyclegreenway.com. To access this podcast in the future and to hear other shakers and movers that we've interviewed, go to bikeroute.com.